Full house, let us out.
Do you think that Tommen took King's Landing a little too literally?
I guess now we know why they named it.
Mm. So do you think Bran went back in time and named it after Tommen?
Oh.
I don't want to get into Bran time traveling.
Is it too soon?
Yes.
It's not too soon so long as you cite your source. I saw somebody tweeted that joke to us, didn't they?
Many people tweeted it, and I will just have to say I'm very impressed. You know, that's one of the things about the internet. I feel like there's no original thought. You say to yourself, oh, this would make a great tweet. And then you go and you search it and you realize that about 50 or 100 people have already done it.
If not done it better than how you were going to do it.
But we have made it following the season finale of season 6
of Game of
Thrones.
How weird is that to hear? How weird is that? That's weird,
it's
right?
It's weird.
It feels like the sun is setting. I know the sun is actually setting right now where some of us are, but it feels like, I don't know, all these articles that have come out this week, David and Dan talking about how many or how little episodes maybe left of the series.
13,
just
right? The unlucky number,
made
13.
Me feel, yeah, mm-hmm. They clarified, well, less than 15, let's say. Oh, gosh. It's it's kind of sad and scary, but it just feels like we've witnessed, I think that really lent something to how I experienced the show moving forward. Treating every episode as if it's less than 15 episodes away from the very end.
Mm-hmm. And as I'm sure our listeners have noticed, we are down one for this episode. Zach has gone off in search of Ilvermorny School of Witchcraft and Wizardry.
Yep.
That we now know resides in the state of Massachusetts. So he is on his way to Massachusetts to get sorted, and he will join us on our next episode. So we await with bated breath what house he has been sorted into.
The Gordian knots choice.
Yes.
God,
I'm going to bet on Horned Serpent for him.
Horned Serpent? Yeah, it's very Ravenclaw, very studious.
I'd hope he'd be a Thunderbird like the rest of us, though.
Are you a Thunderbird too, Hannah?
Yes.
Ah, you didn't say that when we were doing the pre-show. You decided to surprise us.
I wanted to drop it. Yeah.
And in other news that has a little bit more to do with Game of Thrones, we asked your questions, or we asked our questions of you as usual for this, and you did not disappoint, as well as with Owens in general for this past Sunday's finale. It's going to be a great show. We're looking very forward to discussing it.
George R. R. Martin is here.
Yep. Uncle Ray. He's at, well, we brought
just
him
go
into
with
the,
it, Anna.
We brought him into the studio, but we locked him in the room next door so he can just continue writing.
Right. I will say, though, the questions that we've been asking has been my favorite part of this whole season, and so I'm going to miss that a lot.
But we can still ask questions.
That was new. Yeah. This was the first season we started doing that in for our second episodes of the week. Specific targeted questions. So I'd say it's been a success given, I mean, even the responses that we get every week, but this week too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been fun. So the first question that we asked is, what will the rule of Queen Cersei look like? Who will ally themselves with the Lannisters? Will Jaime confront the Mad Queen much like he confronted the Mad King?
That's a great question. Who came up with that?
You did, Micah.
Gee, I wonder.
It is a great question, though, and especially as I just rewatched the episode like 10 minutes ago, and
nice. We
end with, well, not quite, but one of the final scenes is Cersei ascending the throne. And I think that one of the biggest questions on everyone's mind is what that's going to look like and how short and terrifying might it be? And I was trying to think of who could even be left to side with the Lannisters. So we got the Tyrells, the Targaryens, the Greyjoys, and everyone in Dorne, obviously, together. And then we've got the North and the Vale together. Mm-hmm. And then the Freys, which are
on
a disaster. Yeah. And then we've got, like, Jaime's look, whatever he gives Cersei in the throne room. So I definitely feel like Cersei's in it by herself right now. I don't see anybody that would support her other than Qyburn and Franken Mountain.
Yeah, I was thinking about this question long and hard. It's an embarrassment of riches almost that we've got these characters that are so badass coming up against Cersei. And Cersei herself has been, you know, through a whole heck of a lot, nobody can deny. But I was thinking about how formidable the Greyjoys are at this point, how formidable Daenerys is at this point. Her dragons are not children anymore. Any one of these armies going up against Cersei too would be a good fight. And, you know, in wondering who's left to fight against, you know, who's left to fight with Cersei here, it's so funny because we have so many characters that have sort of cut their teeth by now, and are just so imposing that it's like, well, we know they're going to do something eventually that's good for TV, that it's not just Cersei getting killed in scene one of episode one of next season, because that's realistic, League, and what's going to, that's realistically what's, you know, sort of accurate in terms of what she's up against. But I think that whoever it is, and it's slipping my mind, whoever it is, it's going to be a good fight to watch, right? Because you want to think that she's so outmanned and so outmatched. But I have a feeling that the writers will surprise us.
Yeah, I think the big question comes down to is how Cersei will treat the people of King's Landing, right? Mm-hmm. We know that she took out pretty much the entire Faith Militant, mm-hmm. as well as the Tyrells and two of her own family in Lancel and Kevin. Mm-hmm. And
sort
really,
of Tommen.
And Tommen as well, yeah. And one question I did have in the back of my mind that I was thinking through as I rewatched the episode was, for Tommen in particular, as he was looking out the window and he saw what happened at the Sept of Baelor, do you think there's any chance that he might have thought that his mother was inside?
I wonder. She was due to be there. I think the question comes in the fact that he was restricted to that room.
Yeah, I was thinking.
Doesn't the person say that his mother wants him safe? So I think he would have known that she was not going.
I don't think the mountain said anything.
No, the mountain
he
didn't.
He said it with his eyes.
But wasn't there another guard who came in at some point?
There may have been a servant.
There was that younger man, the servant. I'm trying to remember at what point in the episode he comes in and tells Tommen why he can't leave. But at any rate, I wonder if he thought his mother had died and that's why he jumped, and in addition to his wife, obviously, and all the people he cares about. Or if he thought that Cersei did it and was just like, well, holy shit, you know, one last act of rebellion against his mom. Mm.
Well, not only that, I would think that he would put a tremendous amount of blame at his own feet.
Right.
For what happened to Margaery and all the others that were inside of the Sept after watching that. I think that it just became overbearing and overwhelming. And I know that we can go back and we can talk about the prophecy from Maggie the Frog, but now it's really come to be fulfilled, with the exception of the end part, talking about the Valonqar wrapping his hands around your pale white throat and choking the life from you. Mm-hmm. And that's why I thought of the question, would Jaime inevitably end up dealing with the Mad Queen, Cersei, much the way he dealt with the Mad King? And I think that, again, that goes back to how will Cersei choose to rule. It seems as if she has nothing left to lose.
Yeah.
Her children are all gone, and that worries me. And I think that Jaime, deep down, will have that sense of duty again to protect the people of King's Landing, because he's already done it once. Why would he not do it again?
I think so, too. And I think that he's going to do his best to lure her back into some sort of sanity, but I think he's going to ultimately fail. And I think about that line that Cersei has when she's talking about she does things because they feel good. She killed her husband because it feels good to be rid of him, et cetera, et cetera. That whole speech that she gives, I guess you could say.
To Septa Unella.
Yeah, that makes me believe that she's past reason. I mean, she's past a point where I think even Jaime could probably get her to rule in a way that anybody would want to be ruled. So I think that he almost already recognizes what he may have to do when he looks at her on the Iron Throne.
You know, one of the users on Watchers, where we asked this question, Marion B. replied and would agree with I think all of us here, in saying, I predict Cersei won't make it past episode 3. And I think that is not an indictment of her character, but I think it completely aligns with just the odds that we see that are against her. The fact that we did get that knowing look from Jamie, and I agree with you, Hannah, I think that that is very likely going to be what happens. And Micah, the call of duty for Jamie. You just don't see that not coming to a head sooner rather than later because Danny's on her way.
Mm-hmm. And there is some theory. I mean, there's lots of questions about who that could actually be in the prophecy. And I have seen some theories of that it could be Tyrion as well.
He's also coming.
Right. But so I don't know. I think that timing is going to be an interesting question. I think she probably will last more than a few episodes. I would hope so. But
I think so.
I don't know. There's this other comment that Daryl K. Patterson on Watchers wrote that her reign would be brief. And he says, remember what her father, Tywin Lannister, said, you're not as smart as you think you are. Mm-hmm. Which I think is going to be a good point for us to remember as we think about, well, it would be a good thing for her to remember as she thinks about how she wants to rule.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that have really interested me in Thrones time and again, like when thinking about it. And I think one of the early ones, I believe I've said this on the podcast before, but it's like once you get down to endgame type stuff, nitty gritty, where we're at sort of basically starting now. And there's a few houses like, for instance, Jon in the North. And you have the Lannisters who the remaining ones, we like two out of three of them. And you're gonna have characters you like fighting each other. There's none of these middle houses. There's not the Freys where you can take your anger out on. There's not the Boltons. It's going to be strictly characters we like at odds with each other. And that's actually very sort of interesting and something that I'm dreading moving forward.
I think in many ways, this story has come full circle because we started out with, at least at the end of season one, feeling as if the Lannisters were gaining power. Ned was killed, and as we progress through the seasons, Sansa and Arya become estranged from their families. Bran and Rickon are supposedly dead. Rob is killed at the Red Wedding. Jon is off at the Wall. But now, here we are at the end of season six. Jon and Sansa are comfortably inside Winterfell. Arya has gone off to Braavos and come back fully trained and able to really take out anybody on her list. And Cersei, we know, is somebody who is on her list as well as the Mountain. So let's see if that plays itself out in any way. But Cersei has completely isolated herself following the deaths of all of her children. And she has created this situation really for herself where, yes, she's sitting on the Iron Throne, but to your point about Tywin and his advice, she has pissed off the Tyrells, she has pissed off the Martells, and she is definitely not somebody that Daenerys would look favorably upon, considering that her Hand of the Queen is Tyrion Lannister. So she's really up Schitt's Creek without a paddle, and I'm not sure outside of just the city defense and the security and protection that it provides that she is safe in any way. And let's not forget the fact that Dany is coming with three dragons, easily able to fly over
the walls,
any Trump walls card. Of protection. So unless she's going to try and align herself with the White Walkers, I don't see anybody. I mean, the only person that's out there right now that could be a potential ally is Euron Greyjoy.
Was that an option that Cersei aligns herself with the White Walkers? Because I am supporting that so hard right now.
It's an option now.
That would be the best.
That's option 1A. I would say Euron, but again, you already have Yara and Theon and the fleet.
And what kind of power does Cersei offer
she doesn't,
to anybody?
That's the thing. That's the crazy thing is that you have somebody who's sitting the throne that really doesn't have any power behind it outside of this monster that's standing next to her
and the
and
master
his
of whispers.
Mad Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah, right. And the children.
And the little birds, yes.
Yeah, the little birds who, I mean, who knows? If Varys is coming back, let's see which side they go to.
I think I'm glad you mentioned Euron because I think that is possibly something that they'll have to contend with. The idea that the Greyjoys will be split And, you know, Yara's plan for the Ironborn is not at all, I think, realistic. It's perhaps the one greatest flaw in the Alliance. And as soon as the Ironborn find out that Yara wants to, have them not rape and pillage anymore, and she's going to have them starting to sow fields, I think it's going to be a very quick turn of allegiance towards Euron. So perhaps that would be, and by now, or by the time next season starts, I can see Euron getting on his feet with his new fleet and going to war with his nieces and nephews just because they oppose him. So maybe that is somebody in Cersei's
corner.
Why
introduce a character like Euron Greyjoy if he wasn't going to factor in and he wasn't going to play a role beyond this season? There's no point. I mean, you might as well have just killed Balin and then introduced Theon and Yara back into the picture and have them take control and just sail over to Essos without any sort of controversy.
Right.
But clearly there's a role for Euron moving forward, and I wonder, because he's really the only option on the table without possibly introducing other families that have sworn allegiance to the Lannisters, which we've maybe heard in passing but have never seen. I don't see any major alliances coming for Cersei to help protect her. I think she probably lasts beyond episode 3. I would hope that she would, but her role and her ability to rule is going to be short-lived. I don't see her being able to sit that Iron Throne for very long, just given what she's done. I mean, eventually she's going to have to answer for the fact that she blew up the Sept of Baelor and killed hundreds
godly.
Of people.
Yeah.
Right. So if people don't come after her, then I think the other option is that she could easily self-destruct. If she hasn't already self-destructed past the point of no return. You know what I mean?
It's interesting because in a post-Ramsay world now, which we're living in, I also wonder, the show for so long has operated on sort of by having a villain. You had Cersei, who was this great opponent to Ned Stark, and as so many characters were in season one. And Cersei's never quite gone away, but there was Joffrey, who was sort of more directly a villain. And to more of the characters as time went on. And, you know, then you have Ramsay, who's pure chaos and villain, who's now gone from this earth, unless he comes back as an undead, 2K17. So how are we going to deal, like, how will the show be different now? Because I'm thinking of Cersei, and we kind of want to see her last and succeed. We want to see more of what her actual plan is, because otherwise it just seems sort of foolish. But, you know, also there's sort of a void there, which maybe will be filled entirely by the undead army, but there's a void in the show now for sort of a real badass villain, somebody you can really hate. I don't hate Cersei. I think it was real badass what she just did. But I fear for her more than I think she'll actually be able to accomplish whatever it is she sets out to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this reminds me of a conversation that we had earlier this season when we found ourselves rooting for Cersei and being on her side in King's Landing against the Faith Militant in a way that we probably have never been before and may never ever be again. But having that attitude shift between love her, hate her, respect her, fear her, is interesting. And I'm excited to see how it plays out. I'm curious to see what her plan is, if she has one, how the people of King's Landing are going to respond, and how long she lasts.
It's a dictatorship, I think. And that's a scary thing in terms of, at least when you had other rulers, for as crazy as Joffrey was, he had the small council, he had Cersei, Tommen had Margaery, had a small council, had Cersei, had Jaime to some extent. But Cersei is in power, but yet there's this complete power vacuum because there's no support behind her at all. And that's really scary because she's ruling through fear, much more so than even Joffrey did. And that worries me tremendously. There's no sort of checks and balances in place for her. And that's why at the end of the day, I think that we're going to have a very similar situation to when the Mad King was ruling over Westeros.
Mm-hmm.
She's the second coming of Aerys.
Great.
So one other thing that we touched on briefly in the last episode, and it just shows you the magnitude of the finale that we didn't spend a whole lot of time discussing it, but that was Bran's vision, the second piece of the Tower of Joy,
right,
and going in and finding his Aunt Lyanna and his father and the discussion of Jon Snow, and of course the revelation that Jon is not in fact Ned Stark's son, but Lyanna's son. And what appears to be, at least from information that was released by Game of Thrones, the son of Rhaegar Targaryen. So this is a major theory that has been out there for a long, long time for book readers. And I think it's something we've always in the back of our mind knew the truth about, just mm-hmm. because of clues that were placed in the books and, of course, in the show throughout the last few seasons. But this is major. I mean, this is something that is a huge revelation, I think. Like I said, given the magnitude of the finale and everything that took place, we just kind of glossed it over. Like, yeah, I knew that. We knew that.
Well, because I think we've taken it for granted how, as people who are so into this series, I think that we've taken for granted this whole theory. And we've just believed that we've been right all along.
To the point where we forgot
the magnitude of what that could be and what that means.
Yeah, this mystery is 25 years old. And I think people have at a certain point taken it for truth or taken it for false, but made their peace with it. I remember before I even knew what Game of Thrones was, being at a dinner, you know, and having a conversation about Jon Snow and specifically R+L=J. I mean, there you go. That's just sort of, it was a huge pressing theory that it was a topic of dinner conversations for years and years and years and years and years.
So this ties in nicely with the second question that we asked on Watchers, which is, what will Bran do now that he knows the truth about Jon Snow? Will the truth about Jon unravel or empower the North?
I like that second bit. But let's focus on the first. Do we think Bran would tell Jon what he learned and how quickly, and sort of what is Bran's whole goal here, besides to find a way to get across the wall? What is the beginning of season 7?
With no horse.
Yeah, with no horse.
Yeah, see, or else.
What does the beginning of season 7 look like for Bran, do you guys think?
Well, just going back to the second half of Jon's parentage, what I referenced just before was something that was released on the Game of Thrones blog, Making Game of Thrones. And it is a graphic which shows the parent line for many characters in the series. And it connects Jon directly to Lyanna Stark, but it also connects him directly to Rhaegar Targaryen.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. I think that is as much confirmation as we need. And I know they kind of were coy in their... And Hannah, you talked about this, how you just wanted them to... raise the
shout
audio
it.
Level a
yeah,
little bit.
Say.
Yeah, they whisper. They whisper. She whispers. It's as if there's another twist coming still.
Well, there's a lot of questions about what she said, like what she named him and what she said.
Right, because his name could very well not be Jon.
Right.
I think Jon was probably a name that Ned gave to him in honor of Jon Arryn.
We named the dog Jon.
And, you know, I've seen theories out there that have said his name is really Jaehaerys Targaryen.
A
former Targaryen ruler who was, of course, not as mad as King Aerys. So there's a lot here. But the second question, I think, is really important, because what happens once that information is revealed? However Bran is able to communicate with Jon the truth about his parentage, or even if it comes in the form of Howland Reed, a character that we know is at the Tower of Joy, knows the truth about Jon, could be a character that surfaces next season.
He wasn't up there with Ned. Like, that bothered me about that scene.
Well, I mean, what happens when Ned walks out of the tower with a baby? I mean,
sure. No, he can definitely find out about it on the ride home. And I imagine
exactly.
Howland's still on the mend from his having just been nearly killed moments before. But
what about the second part of the question in terms of, will it divide the North and this new alliance that's been created? I mean, remember, Jon has been named King of the North, the White Wolf.
Yeah.
All these houses have now rallied around him. What happens when they find out that, yeah, he's part Stark, but he is also part Targaryen and could technically be the rightful heir to the Iron Throne?
I would like to think that it's not going to have that much of an effect. I think that because he's going to have some Stark blood in him. He's raised in Winterfell by Ned. And I think that the North has rallied behind Jon, regardless of what his true parentage is already. You know, they're talking about how he's Jon Snow and that doesn't matter. He can still be the king in the North. And so I would like to think that that wouldn't change enough. Like by the time that everybody finds out, I'd like to think that it's not going to make that big of a difference. Just because Jon has already proven himself to be a Stark enough. I think that it's going to come into play most importantly when it comes to dragons, possibly.
Right. Well, cock merchant would seem to, one particular cock merchant over on Watchers on the Wall would tend to agree with you. I want to go over the points they said. Jon's parentage is a big question for me story-wise. I don't know how it would matter. I still don't think either prophecies nor rightful claims will play a huge role other than maybe for propaganda. The Targaryen bloodline might be important for dragons, though, and if that's the case, Dany and Jon are the last people to continue that line. So Jon's Targaryen blood or possible Targaryen blood would give him a great advantage, it would seem, when it comes time to either face against or ride on a dragon. But for the rest of it, you know, in terms of how the North will handle it, it could go both ways, I guess, but I think if they don't like Jon as a result of that, if that news comes out and they're like, who are they going to turn to? There's Sansa right there. She's a Stark. She can handle it. You know,
it's, I almost feel like it's too much though, right? You know, they've been through so much at this point. Do they really need to have to worry about him being half Targaryen and what the implications of that may mean? I agree with what Hannah said in terms of the dragon. I think, you know, he can potentially connect with one. Mm-hmm. And that could be very significant moving forward. You know, are we looking at a battle of the North with Jon versus the South with Dany? Are we looking at them coming together to face what is coming from beyond the Wall? You know, these are all huge questions that we can spend a lot of time, I think, during the off season, our on season, as we like to call it, discussing. I think there's so many questions now that we can just spend hours theorizing and talking about. And for Bran, I just don't know how he's going to make it to the Wall unscathed without running into the Night King. You know, does the Night King having his mark upon Bran allow him to cross the Wall? Should Bran be able to cross the Wall? I think that's a huge question. And just, can Bran use the weirwoods to communicate? Mm-hmm. And we've seen it in the books. Can he utilize them to talk with Jon, to talk with Sansa, to talk with anybody who might want to listen? You know, past, present, future. I think 13 episodes, there's still a lot to pack in.
Yeah, and I would say, and we can probably talk about these when we wrap up all of season 6, but I think that one of my major questions coming out of this episode and the season in general is how Bran fits into this whole picture. Exactly what you're saying. How does he get this information to Jon? Does he get this information to Jon? When can he get this information to Jon? Does he bring the White Walkers onto the other side of the Wall? Is he going to be a liability because now he's got that mark on him?
He has to cut off his arm. I'm sorry to say. It sounds just like, you know, terrible. It's like he's already lost his legs. He's got to lose the forearm. I just think that is probably good practice.
Yeah, I just don't see him. I don't see him being able to get to the other side of the Wall or to be in a situation. And maybe it is, Micah, like you said, like in the books where he can communicate through the weirwood.
Maybe he goes somewhere and has somebody that he talks to wherever it is, send a raven to tell Jon to come and get him.
Right.
You know, or even Dolores Ed.
Because I think that him going near the Wall or to the other side of the Wall equals the Wall coming down and the White Walkers being there.
That would suck for Mira, though. It's like, well, we can never go south again because once we do, the Wall will fall. So it's like, hey, we're just up here playing house in this cabin. We don't have a horse even, but we're stuck up here.
But we're doing it. Yeah. 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 So that's one of my big questions and how that's going to play out. We can talk about over the next 1,000 years that we have to wait till season 7.
Fortunately, it's not that long, but it feels like it.
Right. And I think one person who would not mind having that long of a period of time is Sam, because he gets to read a lot of books between now and the start of next season. And just that whole scene, Eric, I know you really enjoyed it. You made mention of it. There was just one really good positive moment in the finale, and that was when Sam walked into this library.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really impressive. It was like Doctor Who, Silence in the Library times 1,000.
Beauty and the Beast times 1,000,000.
Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of that. Yeah, I saw a lot referenced.
Of Owens come in with that. It was a reprieve from all the craziness that we've seen. And I think that Sam has a lot of potential.
And yet altogether it was something different than what appears in the books. So having our question be, well, to what extent will they show what was in the books regarding this place? The question specifically, what will show Sam do in Old Town? Will he at least drink fearsomely strong cider?
I don't know. That dude is pretty strict when he got there about women and children, so I don't know about alcohol.
There's no fun there.
No fun at all. Cake or death, I'm sorry, we're fresh out of cake.
My favorite comment was Emily the Frog, who said, drink and learn things. Maybe find, in all caps, the cure. Hashtag Sam Saves Jorah 2K16.
Oh, 2K17, you mean?
2K17, sorry.
I think we're all in agreement that Sam is going to find some crucial piece of information that is going to help to defeat what's coming from beyond the wall. It's just a matter of when he finds it out and how quickly he can get the information to the right people.
Right.
Really, he needs Bran. That's who Sam needs more than anybody is Bran. Bran needs to find a way to do like a pen pal system with the library in Old Town and get Sam, because that would just be the most effective way to communicate. Even better than a raven.
Well, in between the two of them, just thinking about all the things that we have the possibility of learning about Westeros, about the history of Westeros, about other places that we haven't yet seen or learned about, I think that Sam's going to uncover a lot of cool stuff, and I hope that we get to take the time to learn what some of that is.
Yeah.
Right, and as Zach mentioned on the last episode, he's also in the same room with that object that we see in the opening credits. So what is that and what does it mean? And could he use that to communicate or to have an impact on the events that are to come?
You guys, I think it's the donkey wheel. I think when you rotate that thing, then all of Old Town goes underwater. Mm-hmm. And back in time.
Well, Zeno is also in agreement with what we've been discussing. They said that Sam is going to bury himself in books and studies, but I'm not sure he will ever finish his training to be a maester before winter reaches the south. I think his purpose is to discover something in the library, some crucial bit of game-changing information that could save everyone.
I hope that he continues to be a ray of sunshine as we watch Cersei destroy King's Landing, as we watch the White Walkers start to come from the north, and then we can just see Sam doing his thing, happy as can be.
Drinking hot cocoa,
and hanging with his books. Cider.
And he's got the sword, too, let's not forget.
He's got the sword.
And one final question we put out there, but I think as Hannah mentioned, there's plenty more to ask as we get into our season 6 recap, and we get into the off-season and start to think about what season 7 is going to look like. This is kind of a tongue-in-cheek question, at least part of it is, but there were some notable characters who were missing from the finale that we didn't get much resolution on. The first is Jorah.
Right.
The second, which can kind of go together, Brienne and Podrick. The White Walkers were missing, and so was Gendry. But Gendry has been missing for a while.
I really want Gendry back, you guys.
I think we all do.
I wonder where these characters were. Jorah could have maybe gotten a scene to say where he's going next, but I think that'll be sort of the real, I don't want to say filler, but when you're talking about how quickly, like, we think Cersei is going to lose, and how all of these other bigger forces of destruction are happening. I think some of these other characters will be on sort of side quests that are tangential to the end game. And I think that, that there will be probably a lot of play, not necessarily all for humor, but for, you know, those characters and development and stories that continue to flesh out the realm and maybe even introduce, you know, more characters. Like wherever, if Brienne and Podrick, for instance, like are traveling to the Neck and the Krennic men and the swamps and everything, like that would be a great opportunity to finally introduce them, especially if we think Helen Reed has a significance to play. In fact, maybe I just thought about this, but maybe Mira would tell Bran to like try and contact her father. And then that would be their connection. Like I would love to see Helen Reed make an appearance and become not necessarily, you know, this great force that is going to get involved in the battle against Cersei, or the battle against the White Walkers, but, you know, somebody that they can introduce that plays a role, if small, in what ends up coming. I think that it's not as clear cut as we think it might be with only 13 episodes left, how exactly the game's going to play and who exactly is the most important or who's still important in the events to follow.
I feel like we've entered the final phase with the key players, right?
Mm-hmm.
The periphery has been pretty much destroyed. And not to say that Olenna Tyrell is not going to be important, but it's clear that the Tyrells were not significant enough to keep around. Most of the Lannisters, not significant enough to keep around. So as we enter sort of the final phase of this series, we know that the Dannys, the Tyrions, the Jon Snows, the Cerseis, the Jaimes, the Aryas are going to be important, and the Brands. So, you know, it still seems like we're coming back to the core that we started with. A little light, you know, so it's like we're Lannister light, we're Stark light.
Crap. You know? There are, you know, you say that there are probably more members of the Stark family than there are of the Tyrells, of the Lannisters. The Lannisters.
Isn't that weird?
That's
when
really
you say it that way, that's really weird.
That's weird. That's really weird.
But I do like the way that Chris C. really put it on Watchers. He said that Jorah was looking for a good dermatologist, which, very good. Well played. Pod and Brienne were en route to Winterfell. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Gendry is sipping an umbrella drink somewhere.
Having a better time than
Gendry
everyone.
Gendry found what's west of Westeros. Uh-huh. He overshot Blackwater Bay, you know, went around the coast and just kept sailing, and he's found like the Hawaii of it all.
I am hoping that Brienne and Podrick are headed to the Brotherhood / Hound. That's where I'd like to put. Not, I'm not gonna put money on it. I was just about to say that, and I'd never put money on any of my
gambling's
theories,
wrong.
But, no, do it.
We'll do a hashtag behind it.
I'd want to think that Brienne and Podrick are headed to meet up with the Brotherhood and the Hound, and maybe eventually Arya. That's what I like.
That'd be awesome. It'd be an interesting grouping, and then if you throw Melisandre into that mix as well,
that'd
be
a
one big happy family.
This episode of Game of Owns is brought to you by Casper. Casper is a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress sold directly to consumers, eliminating commission-driven inflated prices. Its award-winning sleep surface was developed in-house, has a sleek design, and is delivered in a small, how-did-they-do-that size box.
Time magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015. In fact, it's now the most awarded mattress of the decade.
Casper means quality. An in-house team of engineers spent thousands of hours developing the Casper. It combines springy latex and supportive memory foams for a sleep surface that's got just the right sink and just the right bounce. Mattresses can often cost well over $1,500, but Casper mattresses cost $500 for a twin-size mattress, $600 for a twin XL, $750 for a full, $850 for a queen, and $950 for a king. That's a full $550 under expectation.
Free shipping and returns apply in the U.S. and Canada. And you can try Casper for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. As a listener of Game of Owns, you can get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/owns and using offer code OWNS, that's O-W-N-S,
Terms and conditions apply.
We'd like to thank Casper for their support of Game of Owns. This episode of Game of Owns is also sponsored by Mr. Robot.
On July 13th, Mr. Robot, the 2015 Peabody Award and Critics' Choice Award winner, returns for a second season to USA Network.
Starring Golden Globe and SAG Award nominee Rami Malek and Golden Globe Award winner Christian Slater, Mr. Robot follows Elliot, a cybersecurity engineer by day and vigilante hacker by night, who follows a mysterious leader to join hacker group F Society.
They put their skills to the test in taking down E-Corp, a giant conglomerate that owns the whole world's personal and banking information. But when they pull off the hack, they quickly realize that they had no idea what they were getting into.
Mr. Robot's full of stellar acting, and it's one of the most uniquely shot TV shows around. Not to mention, it features Christian Slater.
And now, of course, that Game of Thrones has concluded the season finale just a little over a week ago. It's a perfect time for you to switch stations and switch shows. Check out Mr. Robot, which returns for Season 2 next Wednesday, July 13th at 10, 9 Central on USA Network.
The official hashtag for the show for when you start watching and want to tweet about it is hashtag Mr. Robot.
We thank Mr. Robot for his support of the show. Kind of before we move on to the Owns, though, I do think it's notable that the White Walkers were missing from the finale. You know, they've sort of always been in the background. They've made appearances in finales before. They were clearly an integral part of this season, much like they were last season with Hardhome. So I'm interested as to why we think that they were omitted and nothing was, you know, left from a cliffhanger standpoint,
right,
in terms of the Night King.
I mean,
not just are they omitted from this last episode, but really the last half of the whole season, right? When's the last time we've actually seen them?
The door, right?
Yeah.
Hodor still holding the door.
That was always going to be
too soon.
That was always going to be the problem, I think, with the White Walkers storyline, because they're marching, right? They're always marching. The end of season was at 2. Sam sees them marching. They're always marching, but they've gone back and forth in distance between, you know, being at the wall, or at least at Craster's, and then not at Hardhome and stuff. We know they can't penetrate the wall, but at this point, they could have had a real cool, like, dead human pyramid at this point and gone over it if they had just gone sort of on a more straightforward path. So it's kind of like a consequence of having everything else in the story having to happen first, that they began shining us on quite early, just as the books do. You know, the prologue of Game of Thrones, for instance, you know, with these creatures, but it's such a forced slow burn that we begin to feel it and question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that we also, more so than ever, understand that they are the real deal. We mm-hmm. understand that they have the power to take everyone out, and it's not that we didn't already know that before that, but I feel like with Bran and his interactions that he's had with them over his last couple interactions with them, I think mm-hmm. that there's no question that they are a force to be reckoned with. And so now that we understand that, it's time to just watch everybody rally and get ready. I mean, I don't think there's anything else we need to know.
Right.
From that.
So you're saying it's the show very like purposefully focused away from them and onto the characters because we know enough to know that they're coming. And then we just have to see what sort of state the rest of the realm is going to be in by the time they arrive in the wall falls.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. And I also immediately regret saying there's nothing else we need to know about them, because that's 1,000% not true.
Well,
but yeah, I think that, yeah, exactly. I think that we are ready for them to come. Does that make sense?
Well, Bran's not. But yeah, I agree. I think, and honestly, this is my hope, because for as much as we just talked about Bran, like, talking to John and talking to Sam, I also want to see more time travel, more warging, more conversations with children, even if all the children are gone currently. If those are the last ones, that he goes back in time and has conversations about them, because I think there's probably more information to be held, to be learned from the types of conversations that Bran can have than would ever be even in a book in Old Town. Like, it's just a gold mine that Bran is sitting on with his powers. And if he were to use them correctly, You know, he would be the largest asset that our side could have, even with his potential weakness and sort of the mark on his arm, which gives the Night King some kind of leeway.
It's like a Horcrux.
Right.
Not to bring it back to Potter again.
it's been a great week. We got new Pottermore info. We got the finale of season 6, which was longest episode ever.
One of the greatest episodes ever.
Absolutely.
It's been a great week.
So we didn't see Gendry. Oh, well, boo-hoo.
And let's not forget, it also set a new record, bringing in close to 9 million viewers. So
wow.
That's a lot of people to watch the finale of a television show.
Can you imagine the people who are just tuning in for the hype? They're like, I wonder what this whole Game of Thrones thing is about.
What's interesting is that I've had a lot of people who have said to me over the course of the last couple weeks that they are getting into Game of Thrones and they're going back, starting at season 1 and going to kind of binge watch it now all the way through season 6.
Mm-hmm. It's a long haul, but it's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, it's what, 60 hours?
Right.
The hype train is finally caught up with them.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And I told them now they can listen to the podcast.
And now they can send us their own.
Yeah.
Yes,
now they
can
send us our own.
As many people did for this finale. One of the best parts, Hannah, you said that you enjoyed about the season was putting out these questions and getting answers. One of the things that I always enjoy about every season is the owns that come in each and every episode, watching Sunday evening after being done live tweeting, seeing the response that we get, all the different creativity, the hashtags, the wit,
hashtags,
the humor, the sarcasm that comes about on Twitter, on Facebook, on watchers, through email. It's really, really cool to see how creative and just witty this entire fandom is. Mm-hmm. and how much they enjoy sending in their owns. And of course, with the finale, this week was no different. So for at least the final time for season 6 related to a specific episode,
right,
it's time to grab the satchel, play the music, and let's start with these owns.
MJ Brady at Buffalo MJ. Let's kick this segment off. My Game of Owns goes out to Qyburn's Candy Corner for dishing out some Grand Maester pinwheels this week. Hashtag going on vacation. Hashtag closed for summer. All with Q's.
All with Q's, of course.
We created a monster, you guys, and it's not
and
unlike
it's still funny.
Meister Qyburn creating a monster. Qyburn's Candy Corner. Visit it on Facebook. And it's at the corner of Flea Bottom and Janelle.
Faith Silly Love Song Dunning over on Facebook said, my own for this season 6 goes to Hannah, Eric, Micah, and Zach for being my absolute best Game of Thrones friends for the last 10 weeks.
Aww.
This is the first podcast I've ever genuinely looked forward to every week. If no one tells you guys, I appreciate the hell out of what you do. I'm going to miss y'all till next season, lords and ladies. Hashtag, last week I called Drogon Drogo by mistake. LOL.
That's really sweet, there. Faith.
Hey, Faith, keep listening. We got an
entire
season.
Yeah, we don't go away.
We're not going anywhere.
Nope.
At Jen Tester 2, my own goes to the Maester's Library for beating Beauty and the Beast from my dream library.
That's right. Man, tale as old as time. Santiago Sanchez, my own goes to the musical score for this episode, which moved you from sadness, expectation, tension, release, joy, sadness again, and even disappeared, precisely to focus all of our attention on one of the many masterful shots this episode. This episode was Return of the King level awesome. Hashtag King in the North. Hashtag Fire and Blood.
Aussie Man Review says my own goes to Davos for shitting himself before battle 1 week and not being afraid to cry in front of his friend John the next. Hashtag sensitive new age onion.
Oh, Ozzy.
Clayton Tobin, all that time in the kitchens with hot pie really paid off. Hashtag Arya kills Walder 2K16.
Yeah, I was going to ask, did hot pie make that for Walder or did Arya
Molly Raisley, my own goes to Dario for saying something I've been thinking a long time. Fuck Marine.
Derek Jensen says, own to the smiles between Jon and Sansa when she dropped the knowledge about Winter's arrival. Hashtag, winter was coming, but now it's here. Hashtag, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives. Hashtag, king of the north. Hashtag, R plus L. Finally equals J.
Anthony Runyon on Facebook, own to Varys. Before the Battle of Blackwater, he told Tyrion he hated the sound of bells because they meant death. And how does this episode open? The sounding of the bells, and oh, the death that they rang in. Also, Varys must have stole Littlefinger's teleportation system.
Yeah.
They both have an evil, mad, genius time machine.
And also, isn't it interesting that Ilaria rings a bell to bring Varys into the room that they're all meeting in?
Ooh. It sounds like she's done that before, although he hates bells, doesn't he? Vicky at Cookies Fly. My own
yeah,
goes,
they do.
Yeah, they do. My own goes to the VFX crew, because since half the cast is dead, they now have millions to spend on CGI dragons and White Walkers.
Worth
I
it,
wish
maybe.
That were the case. Yeah, maybe. We'll see. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Jen Calhoun tweets in to say, own to this episode making me seriously consider naming all my future kids Lyanna. If I have four kids, don't care. All Lyannas.
That's awesome.
I'm sure your future sons will understand.
Own to both Stark girls, to Sansa for being all, yeah, nah, to the Littlefinger and his need to have fingers in all sorts of pies, to Arya, who just goes literal with fingers in pies. Hashtag, I need to stop eating during Game of Thrones. Hashtag revenge throat slit. Hashtag queens of the north.
John Tetlow at John Wayne 603 on Twitter. Own goes to Littlefinger for allowing Varys to borrow his jetpack. Hashtag good gas mileage.
Jake T. Holt says, own goes to Cersei for, instead of playing the Game of Thrones, flipping the proverbial Monopoly board off the table. Hashtag shame.
Shame.
Nick Hazel, my own in a funny way goes to Marjorie Tyrell, and here's why. In an episode where Cersei kills everyone and secures herself the throne, who's the one person to escape? Olenna. And we already see how pivotal she'll be against Cersei going forward. Marjorie personally saved her, and she got out where she could, and she got out where she would certainly have been amongst the fallen. So Marjorie, you may not know it, but from beyond the grave, you're contributing to Cersei's demise categorically.
Oh.
Go, Marjorie.
I like that. I'm going to refuse to read DJN.
I just put it in there because it's so funny.
This is the most hilarious own ever written, but it's not
we don't have to read it.
Wow.
I just wanted you guys to read it.
Thanks for sharing. That's really funny. Vernon on Twitter. My own goes to Varys, his ability to set up a portkey. Hashtag Varys is a Hufflepuff. I love these theories. Mm. Jetpack, portkey, TARDIS. Keep going.
At Bishop Games says, own to Qyburn's Candy Corner for getting the hashtag little birds so hooked on hard shit, they hashtag Julius Caesar Picel.
Heavens, yes.
That's one way to look at it.
I was very surprised how loyal it seemed the children were to Qyburn's every whim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a short turnaround.
Just remember,
yeah,
Daddy's on a ship on his way home.
Josh Williams says, own to Darth Cersei for gaining power by exterminating an ancient religious order. Hashtag Order 66.
Nice. Got a Star Wars fan over there, Sir Mosh. Bradley Russell, own to Jon for choosing Davos over the Red Woman. If anyone can counsel Jon against making foolish weddings, it's Sir Davos. Hashtag the King in the North. Hashtag longer may he reign.
Robert Lundquist, own to Arya for answering Walder Frey's question. The Starks mocked me. Where are they now? Hashtag the Starks send their regards.
Yes. So nice. Good. Ashley Payne, own to Cersei for introducing us to her own personal brand of savage torture. Wineboarding. Hashtag zero dark Cersei. Hashtag drunk with power. Hashtag feels good.
Wineboarding, zero dark Cersei.
Zero dark Cersei. I love that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Frank Seitz, owned to Lyanna Mormont for the best nomination speech ever. Hashtag Jon Snow for King of the North 2K16. Hashtag I approve this message.
She's really good.
She's so good. We can't say that enough.
Amber H. says, my first ever own goes to Lady Olenna for, quote, what's your name? Barbara? Hashtag Sand Snake Barbie. Hashtag Queen of Burns. Hashtag Let the Big Girls Talk 2K16.
Oh my God.
Hannah, you really started this 2K16 thing.
I hope it never ends. I hope 2016 lives on forever. Jay Wells says, mine goes to Sansa for giving Littlefinger the strongest stiff arm of the season. Hashtag hit him with the Heisman. Hashtag curve of the year.
At Manuclear Bomb, owned to Tom and Baratheon for reacting exactly how I would to Margaery's fate.
Definitely
yeah,
have to
that's accurate.
Give Manu a nice shout out for his Twitter nickname,
which
Jon Snow's Manu Bun.
Never changed.
Matt Besnard over on Facebook, owned to the opening credits for having the Stark sigil back on Winterfell where it belongs.
Nice.
At Letty Librarian, owned goes to Sam for locating George R. R. Martin in the Citadel Library, hunkered down in a corner with a quill, finishing Winds of Winter. Yeah, if you go frame by frame really slowly, he's definitely there.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it.
Occam's Whiskey Bottle says, Bran would have gotten known had he been close enough to hear what Lyanna whispered to Ned. Hashtag WTF Bran. Hashtag get closer. Hashtag they can't see you.
That's a great point.
That's
it's
a really
so real.
I just think he's going to have to go back in time again to that same moment and then walk forward a little bit.
Ooh. And just like lean his ear in just a little closer.
A little closer.
A good own here from Jackie Mac 04, who said, own to the Faith Militant for the second best door holding we saw this season. Hashtag
Man.
RIP Small Council.
Man.
Over on Facebook, probably my favorite own this week goes from, or is from, Crystal Spires, who says, sing a song of sixpence, a pocket full of rye, 4 and 20 fray boys baked in a pie.
I've lost my appetite now.
It's too good.
Jared Kozel, owned to John, the king of the north, and the badass women who raised him to the throne, Sansa and Lyanna Mormont. Winter is here.
Jeff Christian at FlashFan82, my own goes to Brienne and Pod for apparently booking passage on Gendry Cruise Lines.
He is in Hawaii.
I can't wait to see all the fruity birds that he sends his letters with now.
Brian Sanderford at 7 Years Leap says, own to the Queen of Thorns for telling the Sand Snakes what we were all thinking. Hashtag shut up. Hashtag what's your name again.
That was brutal. That was really, really brutal. A good opportunity. Not wasted all the same in commenting, I think, a little fourth wally about how we felt about the Dorne storyline.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was good. Dylan Brown Music, at Dylan Brown Music, owned a Tommen, who was probably bidding farewell to Sir Pounce when he walked away for a second.
Oh.
Aww. Hashtag Tommen kills Tommen, 2K16. I guess that
one
works.
Would just predict.
You know, I want Sir Pounce to sit the Iron Throne and Cersei just like let him.
Griffin Keen Hansen says, own to Cersei's wardrobe. While everyone else was dressing up for her trial, she was dressing up to take the throne. Hashtag hear me roar. Hashtag brought the house down.
Yeah, she did.
Love it. Love her outfit. Atomic's Actual on Twitter, my own goes to the pin and to the split second when I realized what was happening before Tyrion could. I blubbered and gushed.
Oh.
She's not sure if it's right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was adorable.
Too perfect.
Anthony Pelliccio, my own goes to Uncle Benjen, who stole a horse from his crippled nephew. Hashtag. Oh, God.
Crawl to the wall.
Crawl to the wall. Hashtag. Maybe the others won't see you down there. Oh, my God. Oh,
I still don't understand. You just left him there.
Gary Manis.
Gary.
Owned to Tyrion for being the first person ever to be Hand of the King and Hand of the Queen. Hashtag casting a large shadow.
Yeah.
Lady Peterson at Oathkeeper26, owned to Sam for having its bell moment every bookworm little girl always dreamed of. Samwell and the Beast, hashtag Samwell and the Beast, hashtag Westerosi Princess.
And we're here. We're at that point where we read off our last own of episode 10 of season 6, John Wick's I Have No Owns Because I Am Speechless. Hashtag Take My Breath Away. Hashtag Top Gun. Hashtag Game of Thrones. Row, row, row your boat.
Gendry.
Brienne, Pod. We're looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
All eyes on you.
Well, there still will be one more opportunity for you to send in your owns for this season, and that will be for the entirety of season 6.
That's right.
I think long and hard. I'm going to struggle.
You think so?
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to do it?
No.
I was
going
to say, all four of us are going to have to go through that daunting task of coming up with one own to take precedent over all others for this entire season.
I can't imagine over 550 minutes of joy all distilled down to one solid moment of ponage.
Well, you still have some time to think about it, and there are a number of ways that you can send in your own, much like listeners did for the finale. You can tweet at us at Game of Owns on Twitter, scroll upon our Facebook wall at facebook.com/Game of Owns, or send us an email at contact@GameOfOwns.com, and we will compile them all together and we will share them on an upcoming episode as we will take some time to put our feet up, sit back, and review all that happened this past season.
Once again, this episode is sponsored by USA Network's Mr. Robot. We want to thank USA Network and Mr. Robot, which returns for season 2 on July 13th, for their support of Game of Owns. And while winter is here, summer is here for our world. And in summer,
yay,
you know what happens? You know what happens, guys? Conventions.
It's con season.
Con season.
We're going to be in Florida in just a couple weeks for GeekyCon, July 29th. Through 31st. So if you would like to join us, you can go to geekycon.com and tickets are still for sale.
Speaking of conventions, though, Hannah, there is another pretty big one that's going to be taking place next year from June 30th to July 2nd in Nashville, Tennessee, and that is Con of Thrones, which I know we're all looking forward to.
It's a year away, but I could not be more hyped for it.
That's good, because it's time to start get hype. Getting hype. Sorry, how do you say it? Get hype?
Get hype.
Get hype. Hashtag get hype.
Hashtag get hype. We have to say it really fast. Mm-hmm. Get hype.
So if you're interested in learning more about it, there is more information to come in the coming weeks and months. But for now, head on over to conofthrones.com. You can drop in your email address to receive our ravens with the latest and greatest information. But again, that'll be June 30th through July 2nd, 2017 in Nashville. We'll all be there, and it's going to be like King's Landing on wildfire.
Except too nobody soon. Dies.
Speaking of ravens, though, we've had a few people write in throughout the season, and just recently this past week with their reviews for our podcast during its season. And I wanted to read some of the iTunes reviews from you now. First of all, thank you to everybody for submitting these. It gives our podcast a little extra visibility, especially now that we're going into our on-season. Rates and reviews of our show will continue to bring our podcast forward on iTunes' list. So, from the One Llama.
Just one.
Love it. Yeah.
One of the top GOT podcasts name. Is the subject. I listened to almost 24 GOT podcasts, and this is one of the best. Great mix of show and book knowledge, and they won't spoil anything that hasn't been in the show or in the books. I think they are less critical than some of the other GOT podcasts on the show, but will call out BS when it's obvious. I like the different views of the hosts, and they all seem to get along like BFFs. Keep up the good work. 5-star review.
Thanks, Llama.
Thanks, the One Llama.
The One Llama.
Always Great by Philly Bauer. Here's another review. Always great analysis and insight, very in-depth, and don't veer off the talking points as do other podcasts. It's a top Game of Thrones podcast.
We don't have talking points.
Yeah. It's a top GOT
podcast.
Maybe that's the key.
Yeah, I guess. We just kind of react, don't we? It's a top GOT podcast for serious fans. Great job, guys. And by Hilly Joe Phoenix, who writes in the subject as eagerly anticipated as the show. 5 stars. This podcast is the only podcast that I am eager for each new episode to come out. The intelligent conversation keeps me analyzing the show in new ways each time I listen. The humor is fun, and the interaction with the audience via social media makes you really feel like you're a part of their conversation. If you need more friends to discuss the depth of Game of Thrones with, these are your people.
Oh,
thank
yes,
you.
Yes, we are your
we
people.
We are your people.
Thank you, Haley Joe. You're our people.
Well, thanks to everybody, like you said, Eric, who has rated and reviewed the show over the course of the season and even going in the months preceding as we headed into season 6. And you know, one other group of people I would like to thank is our patrons over at patreon.com/goo, our bannermen, our small council who have supported us throughout season 6 and even before and will continue to do so in the future. We can't say thank you enough for your support of the show. And if you're interested in supporting Game of Owns, head on over there, check it out. There's a lot of great things for you as a patron of the show. Bonus content, a squad of Ice and Fire, which is, as we like to joke, Hannah's favorite podcast.
It's not a joke. It's very real.
And many other things. So thank you really to everybody who has been with us on this ride, on this journey through season 6. We have supposedly just 13 episodes left to go, which will be split amongst 2 seasons. But I don't think the hype for this show has ever been bigger. As was mentioned earlier, close to 9 million people watched the finale on HBO on Sunday night. And I'm just looking forward to everything that is to come, you know, Con of Thrones amongst them. And, you know, we will take some time and we will collect our thoughts on everything that was season 6 and look to next episode to recap all of those thoughts and to come up with our owns of the season. And again, you can send in your owns to us for season 6 in any number of ways, Facebook, Twitter, email. We look forward to hearing from you and can't wait to see what you thought of season 6.
For those of you in the United States, we would like to wish a happy Independence Day.
No wildfire.
Please be careful with wildfire.
Celebrate sans wildfire. That stuff's pretty volatile. And also celebrate with the original Independence Day and not the sequel that is in theaters right now. Because I heard bad things and I believe everything I read.
So. And if you're at a local fair or other event, make sure to stop by your local candy
Kyburn's
cane. Make sure to stop by your local cotton candy corner.
Oh god,
I hear it's popular this time of year.
It's Kyburn's favorite.
That's cotton candy with a Q, not with a C.
Obviously. Damn it, Mike! And now I have to start Kyburn's cotton candy corner on Facebook
all
and see how many people
downhill. So we will see you next episode.
See you soon.